Okay, so we're back from the lunch break and preparing for our last couple of meditation sessions. And I don't know about you, but what often happens to me after I've eaten a meal is it's a little easier to fall asleep when you're trying to meditate sitting because you're trying to digest the food. So remember that walking meditation is available, which is a nice way to raise up some energy. And interestingly, in the suttas, the Buddha gives monks almost total freedom to choose whether they will be doing walking or sitting meditation. He never seems ever to impose, like, you know, okay, now you will sit and now you will walk. And, you know, I insist you do at least this much sitting at this time of the day and et cetera. It's he just quite freely and generally says, yeah, just practice sitting and walking, you know, and it's up to you which one you're going to do. And it's... both of those are considered as formal meditation. It's not like only the sitting meditation is formal. Now, having said this, if you want to achieve these deeper states of meditation, which are called the jhanas, also called samadhi, translated into English as like concentration or absorption, you pretty much are going to need to be sitting for that. That's where these deeper meditations virtually always happen. But having said this, there's sort of a lighter version of the Brahmas, or sorry, jhanas and samadhi. There's kind of a, you know, lighter version called the Brahmaviharas, which is translated as the abode of the gods. So vihara is like abode or like a dwelling or like kind of a, almost like a guest house. And then Brahma is a reference actually to a Hindu deity called Brahma. But in a general sense, it means, you know, a heavenly being. So this is like, we want to go to the abode of the heavenly beings here. That's the Brahmaviharas. So this would be things like loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, or equanimity, or joy or serenity. The Brahmaviharas come in sort of these different flavors. It's almost like almost different flavors of ice cream, you know, but it's all ice cream. And yeah. Like a Brahmavihara is mild enough that it's possible to do them even while talking or walking or doing things. It's hard to do, but it's possible. Like you can actually be doing some other activity at the same time. Whereas when it comes to like samadhi or jhanas, you're basically going to need to be sitting very still. Your mind becomes very still. You certainly won't be talking to people. You certainly won't be doing anything at the same time. And you go very deep inside yourself, and it's a very powerful experience that just kind of entirely takes over your mind. Like there's little to no sense of normal consciousness anymore. Like you're not aware of sounds anymore, sights. You might have the faintest bit of consciousness of sounds, you know, but it's sort of distant. It's sort of like, it's not something that attracts your attention at all. It's just kind of happening way off in the distance, and it has nothing to do with you almost. You know what I mean? It's like, just like you can almost entirely ignore the sound of these cars because they have nothing to do with you. You know, your brain just kind of filters it out. It's like, you know, irrelevant. It's just, who cares? You know, your normal senses become like that. They become irrelevant, and who cares? And you're in this very all-encompassing, super blissful state. That's the jhanas. And it's very powerful. Yeah, that's a great aspiration for all of us. Although not entirely easy to achieve in just a one-day retreat, okay? But Brahmaviharas are much more realistic. Those are kind of a stepping stone on the way to the jhanas, you know? It's, yeah. The Brahmaviharas are one of the little idiomatic phrases you see in the suttas to describe it is above the world. Above the world. Like if you can achieve the Brahmaviharas, you are quote unquote above the world. It's as though you have flown up into the sky like an angel kind of thing. You're above the world flying. And it actually feels kind of euphoric when you're doing it. A bit like, you know, like if you've ever jumped on a trampoline and, you know, like you kind of fall onto your back and you get that kind of euphoric feeling. It's a little bit like that. It actually has a flying in the sky quality a bit, you know, maybe not quite the same, but you know what I mean? There's actually kind of a rush to it. There's kind of a peaceful, uplifting brightness to it, you know? And a nice idiomatic phrase they use to describe the jhanas or samadhi is gone to greatness, gone to greatness. That's, you know, that, and let me underline the word gone. Okay. Because in that state, your sense of self will be gone. Like there is no normal sense of you being a person, like an individual, like a me.
It's just all experience then.
Well, how can I put this? Once you enter that state and you experience what this absence of a sense of self feels like, then you will have a sense of context. It's like, ah, that's what it's like for my sense of self to be stripped away. And what a fantastic experience that ends up being. Like when you are always feeling your sense of self all the time in normal waking life or whatever, it's hard for you to know how that feels because it's happening to you all the time. It's only once you take a step away from it in a jhana, like you strip it away, then you're like, ah, so that's what it's like to not have it. Only then do you kind of understand what the sense of self is as being a removable thing. You know, before that time, you're kind of welded to it. And you're like, what? How could I not have a sense of self? I don't know what you're talking about, Venerable Subro. You're kind of talking crazy talk. It's like, well, wait till you get there. Then you'll know what I mean, you know? Yeah, and they use a simile for this. And it kind of goes like this. Like, imagine there's two tadpoles swimming in a pond. And now, neither tadpole has any idea what it is like to hop around on dry land because they're always in that pond. They're always in the water. And you could not possibly describe to them what air is or what dry land is. They just don't know. It's beyond their experience. Okay, but then one of them matures into being a frog. He climbs out of the pond and he jumps around on the grass for a while and experiences the sunlight on his skin and sees, you know, a bunch of new things. And then he goes back in the pond again and tries to explain what he saw to the other tadpole. Like, wow, you should have seen it. You know, I saw the leaves blowing on the trees and the sun and I felt the breeze on my skin. And it was, you know, the air was so fun to breathe. It had smelled like flowers. And the tadpole's like, what are you talking about? I don't understand any of that. You know, like, yeah, so only that frog who climbed out has the sense of context, okay,
yeah,
of what it is like to not be in the water.
Well, it's even like the Brahmaviharas, right?
Yeah, well, that one is a little more conventionally. You can still have somewhat of a sense of self in a Brahmavihara.
But I'm just saying it's a word. If people haven't experienced it, no, it's just a word, right?
You're right. Yeah, well, it is like. It is like, you know, very warm, tender, affectionate love you might have with a wife or a girlfriend or something, but it is completely devoid of any lust or sensuality, And it's just very purely heavenly and angelic. It's a much more refined light love. Yeah. But you're right. It is beyond the normal range of human experience. Even like the most wonderful romantic love, like the poets would be talking about, you know, like poets like Rumi are making all these nice poems about, oh, tender love is like, you know, a wonderful, river swim, or I don't know what the hell he talks about, or whatever. You know, it's like, okay, guy, yeah, you're right. Love is nice like that. Very nice even. But you know, Brahmaviharas are another level. Like when you actually float into the sky, it is different. It is different than kissing your girlfriend in the bush or whatever, you know, like it's another level. Yeah. I meant the bushes. Yeah. You know, like outdoors. It's just no pun here. Okay.
So when you enter into a jhana or a samadhi, does your soul become unaware of its attachment to its body?
Does your soul become unaware of its attachment to its body? Well, maybe I better answer this. I'll answer this. In Theravada Buddhism, what you just called your soul, we would prefer to label that your sense of self, okay? You feeling as though somebody is there, you know, your soul, or whatever, your mind, or your core of your essence of who you are as a being, we would say, well, you have a feeling as though there is somebody there. You have a strong assumption there is somebody there. You know, you're having an experience of self, sure. But that ends up just being an experience. That ends up just being sort of a... that ends up just being a side effect as to how you normally use your mind. We feel a sense of self. We feel somebody is there. Whenever we use our minds in a kind of subject-object way, which is normal. Okay, so here's me here, Venerable Subro, and there's you, Rob, over there, okay? And, you know, subject-object, right? And this is the conventional way of living in the world, and it's very practical, you know? Like, we need to think this way in order to get along, you know? Like, Marty can... like maybe I'll ask him, hey, can you please pass the potatoes, Marty, or whatever, at lunchtime? And, you know, I have to act like somebody's there, Marty, to get the potatoes, you know, politely, you know. So it has a function, right? But there's this other way of using your mind, and meditation trains this, where there is no subject-object divide anymore, okay? It becomes like this unified experience where there is no separate me and separate you, okay? Mm-hmm. It's all just kind of, it all collapses into just being a bunch of sensory input and nobody's there. Like your sense of self drops away. It's only because we perceive things in a subject-object way that we have a sense of self to go with it. The sense of self arises concomitant to this subject-object way of seeing things. But once we quit with the subject-object perspective, the sense of self also vanishes concomitant. It's just sort of an epiphenomenon of how we use our minds as to whether we feel if there's a self there or not. There is no permanent soul. There's just a sense of self, which comes along with using the mind in this subject-object way, which is normal. You know, when we're in sort of tadpole mode in the pond, that's the subject-object way of using our minds. When we're in frog mode and we jump up on the grass, the subject object thing has collapsed, and it's there is no sense of self. And that's where the piece is going to come exploding out of, by the way. You know, that's where all the piece is. Yeah, Buddhism uses this terminology, nama rupa. That's kind of worth an entire Dhamma talk, and it's a complicated issue. But that one of the ways of kind of translating it is name and form. Nama is name, rupa is form, and it is one of its. You can use this nama rupa term in a number of ways, but one of the ways is like subject object. Yeah. Yeah. So. Where we're hoping to go with all this meditation eventually, you know, this is over a period of years, maybe even decades. You know, you really kind of, if you make a habit of this and you really get into this, you'll know more what I'm talking about as time passes. And you will get better and better and better at shifting your mind into like frog mode, and you feel peaceful. And basically your experiences of your senses just becomes this, much more kind of collapsed and unified experience rather than subject object mode, tadpole mode, as it were. Your mind has sort of two modes. Yeah. And sadly we use the tadpole one way too much, you know? So you're slowly training your way towards frog mode here. Yeah. okay, let me just make sure I'm not, this is turning into a Dhamma talk now, actually. It's not so much meditation instructions, but I'm trying to motivate you that this does go somewhere. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, okay. Now, but just for today, okay, we have two more sessions. If you can just try your best to stay in the present, you know, be mindful of your body, be mindful of your breath, or both. Whatever it is that captivates your attention, that's the right one to do. Okay, if you try breath for a while, and it's not really your cup of tea, your mind's wandering quite a bit, maybe try body for a while. Try, can you be mindful of, try part by part. Can you be mindful of your entire head? Can you feel everything on your head, every little thing, even the insides of your ear canals? Even tiny spots, what does it feel like on, the front surface of your ear canal in your right ear, like towards the front of your face, that one in particular? Can you feel really fine grained places? Can you tune in and get more sensitive? It's kind of a little game you can play. Yeah. And, for those people who have a job where they use computers a lot, I'm going to suggest that it can be very balancing and very sort of, it can help round you out. Try being mindful of the entire back surface of your body. Okay, so like the back of your head, the back of your neck, back of your shoulders, all the way down your back, all the way down like the backs of your legs, back of your ankles, the whole thing. Because when we use computers a lot or phones a lot or whatever, it's very easy for us to use our mind in two sort of like a narrow and focused way. Okay. We're so focused on some tiny spot on the screen, maybe like a button we're going to click or whatever, some picture or some thing we're, some app we're using or whatever. We get very focused on that. And we can develop over time really sort of poor awareness of that back surface of our body. It's almost like all of our attention has come to the front. You know what I mean? And we're using our mind in this kind of laser-like focused way. So if you have mindfulness of that back surface of your body, you can kind of, bring some balance into how you inhabit your body more. Yeah. And I have a fun one for you to try too, if you do walking meditation. This is another kind of balancing thing, okay? So remember I was just saying, if you're looking at your phone screen all the time or your computer, you're always focused in on something. When you're outside, try to see as widely as possible with your eyes, okay? Like actually, your eyes can take in a lot of stuff out at the edges, eh? at the periphery. Your eyes can actually see like pretty much right straight out to the sides. Like I actually have sometimes people do a little exercise, like just right now, stick your arms straight out to the sides. Okay. Now look what I'm doing with my fingers. I'm just kind of move my fingers a bit. Now kind of look straight ahead. And can you see your fingertips way out at the sides, just moving a little bit? Can you see that far? And you can move your hands a little bit forward. If I move my hands even this far forward, I can actually see my fingertips just slightly moving at the edges of my vision. Mm-hmm. Isn't that astonishing? Mm-hmm. Isn't that astonishing that your eyes can see that far out to the sides? Okay, you just tested that. Okay? Now, when you're outside and doing some walking, just try this. This is quite a fun little game, okay? Try to see the entire vision in front of your eyes, meaning right out to the sides, okay? Don't be focusing in a laser-like way at this squirrel and that flower and that little, big gulp cup in the ditch or whatever, you know? No, don't focus on anything. See the whole picture. See the sky. See, it's just one giant picture, like panoramic vision, okay? And you're not really focusing on anything. You're just kind of spacing out as to what's in front of your face, It's all one comprehensive picture. And you're not discerning any one object in that. You're just letting all the sight flood into your eyes as it is. It's one big picture, okay? And what the game becomes is your mind is very used to focusing in on stuff, and it'll want to focus on something, you'll see like a bird settle on a branch somewhere and you want to focus on the bird. But I say, no, don't do that. That bird is just part of the big picture. Don't stop this wide angle panoramic vision just because a bird came. The bird will tempt you to look at it, but don't. That's the challenge.
What if it's a bear?
You must trust no bears are going to come. you trust that these lovely grounds outside are 800% safe. There's no bears. There's no tigers. There's no nothing.
I think your laser vision would kick in by that point.
Yeah, like if it is truly a threat, fine, run from the bear. But, we all know that's a 1 in 100,000 chance or something. It's not going to happen. Yeah. So yeah, don't trip over things, obviously. You have to have that much mindfulness. Just don't trip over things. Don't hurt yourself, obviously. But, trust that you are almost in totally safe and you can just afford to do this panoramic vision thing. Yeah. And this is a fantastic exercise to help you shift more into this kind of frog mode I was talking about. Where your experience of the senses become you just sort of allow yourself to be flooded by all your senses, all the sensory input coming at you at all your senses all at once. Okay, we're being flooded in all of our senses all the time, but we're accustomed to using our minds in a way where we're always discerning. We're ignoring 99% of that data. Because we're like, well, what's of utility right now? What do I have to focus on? Is it my watch? What time is it? I only look at the watch, Or is it time for a sip of coffee? And I only look at the coffee cup. I don't care about anything in this world except my next sip of coffee. And I only look at the coffee cup, Or maybe you're eager for to inhale a little vapor out of your vaporizer. Okay, well, where's that vaporizer? You focus on that vaporizer. Or whatever it is, okay? And the exercise here is quit that focusing business. And you want your senses to inhabit your senses very fully and richly. Quit this discerning business, okay? By the way, that's another way of interpreting nama rupa. When you use your mind in this very utilitarian focusing way, I want my next sip of coffee. I want my next inhalation of vape. I want to look at my phone. What time is it? I want a little lip balm out of my bag. And we just move from focused thing to focused thing. That's nama rupa, nama rupa, nama rupa. each time we use our minds in this focused utilitarian way, which is the normal way people live. But that's not where the happiness is. The happiness is when you just take in the whole scene and you just melt into it and you just let the sensory data flood you. And your sense of self drops away as that flood hits you full on. There is no sense of self if you're doing this right. Your sense of self will be flooded. It will be lost in the flood of that sensory input. And that, by the way, includes your mind. This is where Buddhism kind of gets a little trippy here. Even thoughts popping into your head is part of the flood, okay? Just like you might see a squirrel. That's just one thing in the flood of sensory information. So too, if a thought pops in your head, that is just one little thing in the flood of information. Okay? And you don't take personal ownership of that thought. It's not you. It's not who you are. And it's challenging to keep returning back to this sort of, no, I will go back to the full flood, you know, the full richness of this moment. I'll return to the present. I will return to my object of meditation and not get lost in whatever thought just came my way. So, yeah, that's kind of where we're going, is we get more sensitive to our senses and we stay in the present more. And we have an object of meditation of some sort. It's kind of our anchor, you know, the thing we keep returning to. And yeah. And the more we do this, eventually our sense of self will start falling away. And that's where all the happy juices are in the meditation. It's when you get good at that. That's when you're going to feel heavily rewarded, very rewarding. That's the good stuff in Buddhism. That's the nectar of doing all this meditating That's when we kind of go to like frog mode. We jump out of the pond. Okay. All right. Okay. So I've said enough for now. Okay. So this next session, I'll just stop the recording.